Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. This week, Nitzavim Vayelech. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Nitzavim Vayelech. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week, we have a double portion, Parshiot Nitzavim Vayelech. The way the cycle of the Parshiot is set up, these two portions always come before Rosh Hashanah. And the obvious question is, why? Clearly, the rabbis who created the cycle saw a causal connection between our Parshiot and Rosh Hashanah, or more generally, the days of awe. Today I would like to examine two verses, essentially, in our parsha and explore the ramifications for Rosh Hashanah. Let us begin with the opening verses of the parsha. Chapter 29, verse 9. You are standing today, all of you, before the Lord your God, the heads of your tribes, your elders, your policemen, every Jewish man, your children, your women, the stranger in your midst, from the one who chops wood to the one who draws water. In verse 11, in order to have you pass in a covenant of the Lord your God and in the oath which the Lord your God is establishing with you today. And then we read a few verses down in verse 13 and 14. Not only with you am I cutting the covenant and the oath, but I am doing this with whoever is here today and whoever is not here today. Essentially, what is happening in our parsha is a reenactment of the covenant that was made at Sinai. And one could say a reenactment of the covenant, which is made with the new generation that's about to enter the land of Israel. We know that the generation that received the Torah at Sinai died in the desert over a period of 40 years. And now the Jews are on the threshold of entering the land of Israel. And there is a need to reenact the covenant. It is a reenactment, but it is also different than what was done at Sinai. At Sinai, the covenant is being made with the totality of the Jewish people. One could say the collective Jewish people are becoming a nation by entering into this covenantal relationship with God. But in this covenant, it is not just the collective. It is every single individual. And that is why Moshe goes out of his way to specify the different segments of the population. And not only is it every individual who is present at that time, but each individual enter the covenant on behalf of every individual who will be forevermore. So let me begin by saying, Rosh Hashanah, every year, is a time when we re-enter the covenant, where we renew the covenant. And when I speak now about Rosh Hashanah, it is not only about Rosh Hashanah, the new year, but is actually the period between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. One might even extend that to a certain extent to the festival of Sukkot. The way we mark the new year is through self-evaluation. And not only self-evaluation, but coming forward and reaffirming our relationship with God. According to Rabbi Soloveitchik, when we do the confessional prayers and acknowledge the different sins that we have done, but perhaps even more importantly, ask God for forgiveness and say, please God, help us that whatever we did in the past, we should no longer do in the future. What is known in rabbinic terminology, Kabbalah La'atid, accepting upon ourselves future behavior. This acceptance is a confirmation, a reaffirmation of the covenant. When I think of how the general population around the world celebrates their new year and how we do it, there's a radical difference. There is no partying. There is no getting drunk, going wild, staying up all night merrymaking, no fireworks. In many ways, it is very, very introspective, where the purpose is to reevaluate and to once again examine the nature of our relationship with God. Let me go on to another verse in the parsha, which to me is perhaps the central verse in this parsha. And again, I will not just read this one verse, but look at what follows. This is in chapter 30, verse 15. Moses says to the Jewish people, "Behold, I have placed before you today life and good, death and evil. I am commanding you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his path, to observe his commandments and his statutes and his laws. And you will live and you will multiply. And God will bless you in the land which you have come to as an inheritance." And then in the next verses he says, "And if you actually turn aside and don't listen, so the consequences will be that we will perish." And then verses 19 and 20. Moses says, "I bring to you as witnesses heaven and earth. Life and death I have placed before you, blessing and curse. Choose life in order that you should live, you and your descendants, to love the Lord your God, to listen to his voice, to cling to him, because he is your life and the length of your days, so that you live on the land which God has sworn to your forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give to them." The title of my session was, or is, Choose Life, based on verse 19. And one might think on a certain level that this may be a silly statement. Choose life. Who would not choose life? Who would prefer to die? The fact that God needs to encourage us to choose life. And what I would like to do is spend the next few moments pursuing this idea and seeing how it is not so simple to choose life. Let me begin my remarks by saying, choosing life is a major theme of the prayer service of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. In the Musaf prayers, we speak of Rosh Hashanah being the day of judgment. We speak about the book of life and the book of the dead that are open before God. Who will live? Who will die? And we know that throughout the prayers we ask God, inscribe us in the book of life. We greet our friends and wish them, may you be inscribed in the book of life. Ostensibly, we choose life. We ask for life. And yet how much do we really mean what we say or appreciate the magnitude and the implications of what we're saying? Let me give an example. And I think this is true of everyone to some degree or another. I very often reflect on how much time we spend preoccupied with material things. For some people, that's reflected in terms of shopping and perhaps a kind of drive to constantly be buying things. For other people, it might be eating, going out. To what degree is it that we involve ourselves with things that are inanimate, that are dead, and make them the core of our lives? Something which is very, very close to my heart. Prayer. Beit Knesset, going to the synagogue. What do we do when we're in the synagogue? And perhaps my experience has been in a variety of frameworks, that very often people find it very, very hard to focus on the words of prayer. And because of that, they will try to engage the people around them in conversation. And very often the conversation does not revolve around the most spiritual elements, but around things that are very, very mundane. As I mentioned earlier, it could be shopping, it could be movies, It could be buying an apartment, professional advancement in a purely material way. Some people, when they walk into a synagogue, may be very, very caught up with the furniture, with the art, and find it very hard to focus on the Torah reading or on the words of the prayers. How many of us are addicted to Facebook, to computers, video games, emails, and very often use these mediums as a way of creating what we call virtual realities, virtual relationships, which become substitutes for real relationships, for really interacting on a deep level with living people? What's my point? Everybody would say that they would like to choose life. Everybody would say that of course they want to live. And yet the question is, how much do we really maximize our lives? How much do we really maximize our relationships? Perhaps the most precious thing in our lives is time. And how much do we utilize our time? Or how much do we kill time? When we look back, and as I become older, I reflect more and more. So what have I accomplished with all these years that I have lived? And what the Torah is saying is, choose life. And perhaps now let me connect it. On Rosh Hashanah, we ask for life. But the question is, towards what end? And in our verses it says, I have placed before you life and good, death and evil. Choose life. Which means that life is very much connected with doing good. But what does that mean? How do I know what is good? And let me just give two examples which show how complicated it is. In chapter 19 in the book of Genesis, we are told of the city of Sodom, what you might call a bird's eye view of the city. And there's one point where the inhabitants of the city surround Lot's house and demand that he give them his guests so that they can get to know them, which is a euphemism for what we can understand as sexual abuse. And when Lot pleads to the people, my brothers, he says, don't act evilly. He places a value judgment. What you want to do is evil. But then in the same breath, he says a moment later, I have two daughters who have never had a relationship with a man. Take them and do that which is good in your eyes. What's good in their eyes is not necessarily what is good. Second example. In the first chapter of the book of Esther, we describe the, again, insider view of the palace of Ahasuerus. And then the Torah tells us, and the Bible tells us, that he makes parties. And in the midst of one of his parties, it says, Kitov lev hamelech bayayin, when his heart was good with wine, he then said, bring me the queen, so that I can parade her and show off her beauty to everyone. It was good in his heart, but it was not necessarily good. In other words, what I'm trying to bring out is that very often, people may choose to do things which are good in their eyes, which are good in their heart, but objectively speaking, may be very, very harmful. Take another example from reality. There are some people who smoke, some people who drink liquor, but not have a drink or two, but drink excessively. And there are those who take it another step and take drugs. And when you ask these people, why are you doing this? And very often the response is, it makes me feel good, clears my mind. And again, from an objective perspective, we could say, but these things are harmful, hazardous to your health. So how could it be that something which may be harmful / bring about death could be good? But it is good in, I feel good, not because objectively it is good. And we know that in those situations, when people take drugs or smoke very often, we become addicted. And we might even say today, when people become addicted to their emails, to the Facebook, to the videos, to the games. The common denominator, perhaps, between all these things is an attempt to really run away from life, to escape from life. And perhaps, let me add, to escape from a reality which is demanding, which asks people to take responsibility for their actions, to not be entertained, but to actually have to produce, to give. And what the Torah is telling us is, choosing life is choosing good. Choosing life is connecting with the source of life, which is God. Choosing life is to love God, to cling to God, to observe His commandments, to observe those commandments, which will also bring life beyond me. Because it's something which in the end, I can hand over as a legacy to my children and grandchildren. It's something which in the end, didn't just start with me, but actually was handed down to me by my ancestors. And which, by my doing these things, at every moment, gives me an awareness of eternity, because I realize that I am perpetuating what was in the past, and then handing it down forever to my future. So that not only do I do something with every moment of my life, but at that moment I am also aware how my present is very much the interface between my past and my future, and gives me that sense of eternity. The verse in our parasha, which says, I have placed before you today life and good, death and evil, closes the Torah in a way. And it brings us back to the beginning of Genesis. In chapter 2, when God creates people, places them in the Garden of Eden, and then commands them and says, from all the trees of the garden you shall eat, but from the tree of knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, because on the day you do, you will surely die. And among the trees in the garden which they are commanded to eat is the tree of life. And in fact, there is a juxtaposition which is made between the tree of life and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. This is in Genesis chapter 2, verse 9. Where it said that God in the garden caused to sprout up all trees, and there was the tree of life in the middle of the garden, and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. The very first commandment which is given to humankind is eat of the trees, of all the trees. And perhaps let me now insert, of all those trees that will give you life, but one tree, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, don't eat, because that will bring about death. And we all know the story, that that tree becomes very, very tempting, and Adam and Eve eat from that tree, and ultimately bring about a reality of death in the world, to the point where they are banished from the garden, cut off from the tree of life. Our parsha is telling the Jewish people, there is another way to connect with that tree of life, and that is to connect to God, to connect to the Torah. We're not in the garden, but nevertheless we have that ability to connect with life. And it's our choice. And we're encouraged to do so. Choose life. Every Rosh Hashanah, and again the extended period, between Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and here I will once again throw in Sukkot, is a time when we're encouraged to choose life, to reset, to reevaluate what our priorities are, to think of how much we use our time, how much we value our time, to think of how much we value the things which we have and the people that are around us, to be able to cultivate the things that are really alive, and to not become preoccupied with the things that are dead. May we all be inscribed in the Book of Life. May we all know how to make the choices in our lives that will truly give us life and make our lives meaningful. May we know how to be able to connect with our past and to hand that over to our future generations. The degree to which each of us is able to choose life, to choose good, to have a sense of that which is really eternal and that which is ephemeral. We bring the Jewish people and the world one step closer to redemption, one step closer to what we call tikkun olam, to a corrected world, to a more perfect world. Shabbat shalom, shana tova to everyone. One, and may we all choose life.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.